Adventures in Research. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today it is one of the most thrilling sagas in the history of America, the adventure of a modern Viking. There are legends that a sorrel-haired Viking discovered America centuries before Columbus. His name was Eric the Red, and his son, Leif Erikson, was one of the hardiest Norsemen that sailed the treacherous seas. But centuries later, another Erikson came to America and turned the history of naval warfare topsy-turvy. This is the story of John Erikson, the modern Viking. In the year 1893, a colorful event took place in Battery Park in New York City.
Some excitement, eh, Margie?
Gee, I'll say. Here, want some popcorn?
Yeah. Hey, that's a mighty big-looking statue, ain't it?
Gee, I'll say. And all the people and marching societies and everything. Oh, and good-looking, ain't he?
Who?
The statue, silly.
Oh. Hey, you know, I bet that statue's a good 8 feet high at least. And all bronze. Boy, I bet that cost something.
Yeah. And look at you.
Yeah, with flags flying and everything. Hey, give me the popcorn, would you, Mark? I get pulled to hear fiction.
What is it?
The Columbia for summer. And Dad's talking about going at the...
Gee, I'll say. I wonder who he is.
Well, who is?
The statue, silly.
Oh, well, I heard a fella say it was John Erikson.
Who's he?
I don't know. You want a popcorn? Good, ain't it?
Gee, I'll say.
Who was John Erikson? He was born in Sweden in the year 1803, but after spending his early years as an artist, journeyed to England, where he turned his mind to inventions. And by the year 1829...
You are Captain Erikson?
Yeah, I am.
I am Sir John Ross. You received my note?
Yeah. Come in, Sir John. About my steam boiler furnace?
Exactly. I need hardly remark, sir, that your compression machine has received very favorable comment in certain circles in the country. I understand that your machine for compressing air was used in clearing some of the Cornish mines of water.
Ah, you are interested in...
No, I just mentioned that to... Well, I'll come straight to the point. I'm outing a ship for another Arctic expedition. I understand that you have some plans drawn up for using some sort of artificial draft on steam boiler furnaces.
Yeah, I have such plans. To the Arctic, you say?
Yes, my second expedition. Of course, I don't want that bruited about just...
Erikson, we've got the news. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were occupied.
It is all right. This is Sir John Ross. Sir John, my partner, Mr. Bradwick.
Excuse me, sir. I'm a bit excited. We've just received word that Mr. Erikson's steam fire engine was a thorough success in Prussia.
My word, you design fire engines, too?
Mr. Erikson is really indefatigable, Sir John. I've been after him about this railroad engine of his, but...
Railroad engine? I say, you're not competing against Stevenson in that contest for the best locomotive. A prize of 500 pounds or some such...
That is right. We are.
Of course, Sir John. We've only a few weeks to work on it. The other contestants were given 5 months to draw up plans and build. But, well, Mr. Erikson only found out about the contest a few weeks ago.
Now, see here. Air compressors, furnace boilers, steam fire engines, railway locomotives, all in, how long?
I shall have been in your country 2 years come April.
All this in 2 years? And how long have you been an inventor, Mr. Erikson, if I may ask?
2 years come April.
My word! I also understand you are a descendant of Leif Erikson, the chap who was supposed to have discovered America.
Ah, my father says we are.
Well, how in the world? I mean, well, if the rest of the Swedes are like you, I'm surprised you're not running America, too.
Captain Erickson's locomotive reached the unheard-of speed of 32 miles an hour. But the enterprising Swede dropped his work in railroading for new experiments. Like his ancestral Vikings, his thoughts turned to travel by water. And in 1839, we find him in America, building an experimental steam frigate for the United States Navy.
Well, John, how's the frigate coming along?
Captain Stockton, and good news this week, at least for myself.
So?
Ah, the Erickson screw propeller is now in use on 41 vessels in your country, Captain.
Our country, John.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, building now, Captain. Only use the double propeller. But this time, I think, we shall attach it directly to the shaft from the engine.
Direct-acting engine, huh? Great Scott, John. That would mean the engine will be below the waterline, huh?
That's my plan, Captain Stockton. I hope it will be a surprise. But to you, my benefactor, I tell you the truth. Because it was you who secured me this position and brought me to your country. You see, an engine below the waterline would be especially desirable in a war vessel. The engine would be so much better protected.
John, I brought you here because the United States needs battle vessels. Vessels that can outfight any ship on the seas. I pray we may never have war again. But if we do, if we do...
Captain Stockton's war was many years in the making. It came in April 1861.
Port Sumter fired upon? That means war.
And in August of that same year, John Erickson addressed himself to the President of the United States.
Mr. President, I propose to build a vessel for the destruction of Confederate warcraft. An idea that has been seen against the day our country, this United America, should be involved in war. I offer my services and my plans with no thought nor hope of private profit. But only to serve my country and yours. John Erickson.
Direct Mr. Erickson to construct his vessel to be completed within 100 days.
100 days. But John Erickson was used to racing against time. His plan for the supreme battle vessel was ready. But the Confederacy had its plans, too.
Gentlemen, it is my contention, as I believe it is yours, that an armor-plated vessel could be so constructed that it could withstand any amount of shelling. My proposal is that we raise the sunken Union frigate, the Merrimack, and armor-plate its surface. With an invulnerable ship, we can ram and destroy every ship in Yankee coastal waters.
Could the Confederacy create an invulnerable craft? John Erickson said...
No! No, by thunder, it cannot be done. If there is one thing, Captain, I am convinced of in my years of study, it is this. A vessel cannot carry enough armor plate that a gun could not be built to penetrate it if fired directly at it.
And so, Mr. Erickson?
In 100 days, I shall build the first monitor ship to patrol our seacoast. It will embody a plan for a battle vessel. It will be largely submerged, weigh little... and carry a turret armed with guns.
The Confederate armored vessel was christened the Virginian, but most people called it by its original name, the Merrimack. The rebuilt vessel was indeed a strange craft.
The surface is 24-inch timber covered with bar iron 4 inches thick, with iron plating extending 2 feet below the surface. It carries 10 guns, 300 men, and its main weapon is the 18-inch cast-iron ram with which we can ram the enemy out of the Atlantic.
And indeed it did. The Confederate Merrimack was... Its armor plating was well-nigh invulnerable to what firepower the Union's frigates could muster.
Orders, Captain.
Orders, Lieutenant. The soda held it in water too shallow for us to pursue. They'll shove it off tomorrow and make a run for it. So the Merrimack shall wait here, and when they come out...
The old ship did herself proud today, Captain.
Indeed she did. Within an hour and a half after we sighted them, we had rammed one sloop and sunk it. The frigate Congress surrendered, and the Minnesota will be ours by morning. Good night, Lieutenant.
Excuse me, Captain, but the Yankees are bringing up reinforcements. It's pulling in beside the Minnesota now.
What type of craft, Ensign?
Beats me, Captain. Like nothing I ever did see. Looks like a Yankee cheese box on a raft to me.
A cheese box on a raft. The Union's monitor, designed and built by John Erickson, ready for its first test under fire. And the ensign was right. It was a strange craft.
Built so low, the waves wash over the deck with only a 9-foot turret and a 4-foot pilot house above the deck. Its armor plating is 1 inch on the deck, 5 inches on the side, and 8 inches on the turret. It mounts 2 11-inch guns with its small amount of exposed surface and its coating. It combines speed and power.
And there they stood, off Newport News. The invulnerable object had at last met the invincible force. It was then, and remains today, one of the most talked about sea battles in history. The two prides of two navies were squared off in their armor. And by morning, the battle began. Penn called that battle one of the two great stories of the Civil War. Said the New York Herald Tribune,
the firing was so rapid that both craft were obscured in columns of white smoke. The monitor steamed around the Merrimack, moving with the ease of a duck on water. The monitor fired shot after shot, two of which, it is alleged, penetrated the Merrimack's side. The Merrimack made several attempts to run at full speed past the monitor, but all these attempts were parried. In one of them, the Merrimack ran her ram with full force against the side of the monitor, but it had only the effect of careening the latter vessel to a slight degree. The Merrimack, though the stronger, did not move with the dexterity of her antagonist. At 11:45, the monitor pierced the side of the Merrimack, and in a few minutes, the latter was in full retreat.
This, of course, was a Union newspaper. The Confederates have their side of the story, that the monitor retreated. And cold history indicates the battle was a stalemate. It was the last great battle for Merrimack when their harbor was in danger of capture, and the monitor sank in a gale before the year was out. And though these ironclad ships had short lives, what of John Erickson, the modern Viking who had introduced the armor-clad vessel into war?
I hope that this will force the great maritime nations into declaring the ocean neutral ground by making naval warfare too destructive a pastime to be indulged in.
But John Erickson died at the age of 86, knowing, we presume, that he had not cleared the mighty ocean of war and death. He had but sounded the death knell of the wooden frigates and opened the age of the iron dreadnoughts and a new world of armored vessels to duel for naval supremacy. To battle for the very seas which ancestral Vikings had explored 1,000 years before. And that's today's story by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Join us again next week for another transcribed story by Dr. Thomas on Adventures in Research.